Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On March 25th, 2021, the Supreme Court decided Torres v. Madrid. This case arose out of an incident Roxanne Torres had with the police officers, in which she was operating a vehicle under the influence of methamphetamine and in the process of trying to get away. She endangered the two officers pursuing her. In the process, one of the officers shot and injured her. Torres pleaded no contest to three crimes. First, aggravated fleeing from a law enforcement officer. Second, assault on a police officer. And third, unlawfully taking a motor vehicle. In October 2016, she filed a civil rights complaint in federal court against the two officers, alleging claims including excessive force and conspiracy to engage in excessive force. Construing Torres's complaint as asserting the excessive force claims under the Fourth Amendment, the court concluded that the officers were entitled to qualified immunity. In the court's view, the officers had not seized Torres at the time of the shooting, and without a seizure, there could be no Fourth Amendment violation. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit affirmed. In a 5-3 vote, the Supreme Court vacated and remanded. The court held that the application of physical force to the body of a person with intent to restrain is a seizure, even if the person does not submit and is not subdued. Justice Roberts wrote for the majority. Justice Gorsuch filed in a dissenting opinion in which Justices Thomas and Alito joined. Justice Barrett took no part in the consideration or decision of this case. Kent Scheidegger, legal director and general counsel at the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation, joins us today to discuss this opinion.
This case begins in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and New Mexico State police officers go to an apartment complex in Albuquerque with an arrest warrant. They see a couple of people there who aren't the ones they're looking for, but they want to talk to them. They're standing next to a Toyota FJ Cruiser. One of them gets in the car, and what happens next is disputed, but the officers want to talk to this person, and she comes roaring out of the parking space in such a manner that the officers believe she's going to hit them with the car. They fire at her. They hit her, but she doesn't stop. She crashes the car. She grabs another car that's idling while his owners are loading stuff, and then takes off, gets on the interstate, leaves Albuquerque, and doesn't stop until she gets to the next town, which is 75 miles away, Grants, New Mexico. This is New Mexico. It's a long distance between cities. And there she finally stops and goes to the hospital. Eventually, the charges against her are dropped or dealt with, and she files a civil suit against the police officers, claiming an illegal seizure under the Fourth Amendment. So the question becomes, is a person seized within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment if that person is shot, that is, touched on their body by an object, not by the officers personally, but they do not ever gain control, and she leaves the scene. The main precedent that is discussed in this case is another one from the 90s called Hodari D. Hodari D raised the question of whether an officer chasing someone and demanding he stop, but he doesn't stop, has seized that person. And the court in Hodari D said, no, that is not a seizure. There has been neither any touching of the person, any force applied, nor a command that is obeyed. In that circumstances, no seizure has occurred. In the course of the Hodari D discussion, Justice Scalia discussed the law of arrest at common law, said that seizures necessarily include arrests as defined at common law. And at common law, it was the rule that if an officer did so much as touch a person while making an arrest, that person was arrested, even if he had not ever been subjected to control and could immediately leave. This rule had some consequences in common law. Once a person had been arrested, the authority to break into the house to further take them under control was greater. And there's an interesting 1830 early U.S. case that was cited by the majority in this case. That was a case where a local Philadelphia constable was charged with the federal crime of having arrested a diplomat, which was a federal crime and a violation of the law of nations. And in that case, a Supreme Court justice sitting as circuit justice instructed the jury in the mere touch rule that as long as that constable had laid hands on the person and stated he was under arrest, that that was sufficient to constitute an arrest. So the majority relies on these various authorities to include the mere touch rule in the law of the Fourth Amendment and say that when an officer merely does so much as touch a person, that he has arrested that person. The final question would be, does the common law rule require actual laying on of hands, or can a person be touched by an object? Now, there is very little authority in the old cases. Almost all of them involve manual touching. There's one old case where a person is touched with an object. It's kind of questionable whether that even applies. but the majority, I think, wanted to avoid fine distinctions and just said it doesn't matter what a person is touched with. If the person is touched by the officer, then that person has been seized within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment because they have been arrested within the meaning of the common law. The dissent by Justice Gorsuch takes issue with this rather heatedly, and in some places, perhaps a bit overheatedly. firstly, dissent notes the oddness of the result. There are two different kinds of seizure now. A seizure of an object requires actually taking the object into one's control, while the seizure of a person can be achieved by merely touching the person, even without control. Justice Gorsuch goes on to say that the discussion in Hodari D about the mere touch rule in the common law definition of arrest is dicta. That is, it's just an observation made in the course of the opinion. It's not necessarily the result. And these kinds of passing observations are not considered precedent and don't have to be followed by courts in the future. He also makes quite a big deal that the cases laying out the common law mere touch rule all come from debt collection cases. At common law, people could be arrested as part of debt collection. And so this is the source of most of the cases on whether a person has or has not been arrested. I think his discussion of that and his distinction of that as being somehow unique is a bit overblown. The treatise by Sir Matthew Hale discusses these arrest rules in a passage that discusses both civil and criminal arrest. He discusses them together. He makes no indication that there's a different rule for civil versus criminal, and that's true in the cases that cite the rule thereafter. The fact that that there are no criminal cases discussing this issue isn't all that unusual, because when you research common law cases in the search and seizure area, you generally do find mostly, if not entirely, civil cases. There was no exclusionary rule at the common law, and therefore there was no reason for a criminal case in most of the time to discuss the law of arrest or whether an arrest was valid. So it's not all that unusual to have civil cases only as the precedents. As for the importance of the opinion, this is an uncommon fact pattern. I don't think there are too many cases where an unlawful seizure is alleged without actually taking control of the person. So maybe it won't come up that often. The other thing about this case is, will the officers prevail or will they be held liable for this? I think they're quite likely to prevail on the remand of the case. They're still protected by qualified immunity. If somebody's charging at you with an SUV with a pedal to the metal, you probably are justified in firing, or at least sufficiently justified to qualify for the qualified immunity rule. that's the case in a nutshell. I think we can open it to questions now, and maybe we'll illuminate them further with questions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kent. We will now open up the floor for a live audience Q&A. In the meantime, I'd like to offer up a reminder to keep an eye out for emails announcing upcoming Teleform calls. You can consult the full schedule of our upcoming Teleform calls on the Federalist Society's website, fedtalk.org. Also available there are podcasts of the previously recorded Teleform calls that you may have missed, as well as on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play.
And for those interested in any... For those interested in counting noses among the justices, I'll go ahead and give the lineup. This is a 5-3 decision with Justice Barrett not participating. It was argued very early in the term before she joined the court. And we have Justice Roberts, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Kavanaugh in the majority. Justice Gorsuch joined by Justices Thomas and Alito. that's... perhaps not too unusual lineup. Roberts and Kavanaugh are usually considered to be the less conservative, relatively, of the Republican appointees. So, you were saying something, Micah?
I was just going to say there's no questions that have lit up the queue yet. So did you have anything else you wanted to cover or any?
It's kind of an interesting... journey through legal history, but as I said, it is a kind of a fact pattern that's perhaps a little corner of Fourth Amendment law that won't arise that often. So I'm not expecting a huge impact on law enforcement. I mean, the officers wouldn't have done anything differently if they knew they might be sued, because I'm sure when they shoot somebody, they do expect to fully stop them.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.